WDIY News is pleased to welcome back Dr. Jeffrey Jerry for a Lehigh Valley coronavirus update. He is the Senior Vice President of Medical and Academic Affairs and Chief Emeritus of Infectious Disease Specialists with St. Luke's University Health Network. Welcome, Doctor.
Hi, James. It's so good to be with you and your audience again.
Our pleasure as well. Let's start with, obviously, the biggest COVID story of the moment has been the president's diagnosis. Can you walk us through his diagnosis and contraction best you can?
I have the same information that everybody else in the public sector does, so I don't have any inside information. I can't tell you for sure where the index case was or at what event or from which person he contracted the disease other than when he announced that he actually had it. We do know that he is tested on a frequent basis. It sounds like he is tested every day with a rapid test, and that anyone who comes within 6 feet of him is also tested for the virus. We know that none of these things are absolutely foolproof, and clearly he did contract the disease. When you look at what might be ahead of him at the very beginning, you have to take into account that he has a number of risk factors. Those risk factors include advanced age. He is 74 years old, and we know that people who are older, particularly over the age of 60, have a worse course in general than a much younger population. We also know that he is overweight, and that is another potential risk factor, and that there are also a number of things, though, that he has going for him. I might also add that he's male, and we know that males also do worse, by and large, over females. But again, there are a number of positives. The worst disease tends to take place in a population that's not only older and has comorbidities, which we don't have any definite evidence that he has, and that would be significant heart disease, other than the fact that he has obesity. And we do know, though, that the worst cases are in individuals who are residents of nursing homes and who have very significant underlying disease. So clearly he's not in either of those. He's a pretty vigorous individual, so that he's not in absolutely the worst segment, although he has definite risk factors. The other thing that he has going for him is that clearly he would have access to the best care possible, to any advanced drugs or treatments, and that he would have very pinpoint, moment-to-moment care that the average person may not have access to. So when you looked at all of these things, all you could say is that he wasn't coming into this with absolutely the best situation, but it wasn't actually the worst. We also know that he was hospitalized at Walter Reed, and that the majority of our patients do not get hospitalized. They don't need hospitalization. At first, it was said that it was a precautionary measure, but it was also announced that he had had several drops in his oxygenation that were worrisome. That brings us to the point where treatment was initiated when he was hospitalized during his hospitalization at Walter Reed. And I can go through that, if you'd like, with the drugs and treatments that we know that he has received that have been widely publicized.
Go for it.
So there are a couple of things that I think we need to put in the background. Number one, that there is no, and I stress no, FDA-approved drug for COVID-19 treatment. There have been a number of drugs that have been given what's called EUA or emergency access or emergency approval, but that is different than a full FDA drug. So we do not have a bona fide drug that we know works for treatment. So we can't say that there is a miracle drug that's yet available. We also know that most of the time when you're treating an individual, what you try and do is to go with what is known as a standard of care. And when you deviate from a standard of care, that you're putting your patient at risk in many cases. In the case of COVID-19, for obvious reasons, since there is no approved drug, there isn't an obvious standard of care. So that the kinds of things that a physician would do and that are being done for any patient right now have a great deal of variability. So with that in mind, let me go through the drugs that we know that he took. Remdesivir is a drug that does have EUA approval. There is certain evidence of some benefit by the National Institute of Health. Primarily, this benefit has been seen in people with severe infections, and there's usually a 5-day course of remdesivir that's given. What we do know is it is currently undergoing full trials that include a placebo trial. In some of the initial trials that were done with this drug, they were not absolute controlled trials. And what it seemed to show in these people with Marek disease was that it decreased their rate of symptomatology from basically 15 days to 11. So that we know that it did reduce the rate of symptoms, but when you actually looked at a decrease in mortality, that was not present in the initial studies, and that's what's being looked at now. So he was given remdesivir. The second drug that he got is a very interesting drug, and it's a monoclonal antibody that's made by Regeneron, and it's a cocktail of two antibodies. And what this attempts to do is to reproduce in a pharmaceutical way what the body naturally produces to fight infection. At the current time, that drug does not have EUA approval. It is currently undergoing trials, and some of the early results of the trials show that it has a lot of promise. And since he was certainly not officially enrolled in a trial, he got the drug under what is known as compassionate use that was cleared by the FDA. That, on occasion, can happen in the general population, but again, you have to go through a number of different areas in order to get a drug approved for compassionate use, and it depends on its availability. Clearly, he got it, and we're hoping that that drug will show a lot of promise. There's now a second antibody drug the Lilly company has that should be in release for trials very shortly. So we think that this, in the future, will be very beneficial, and it may have been very beneficial currently for the president. He also received dexamethasone, and as you know, that's a steroid that has been available for many, many years. It is an anti-inflammatory drug. There's now trials that have shown that when you give it to people who have shown a major drop in their oxygenation level, in severe cases, that it can be helpful. It has not been shown to be as helpful, or helpful at all for that matter, in milder cases. So this is usually reserved for people who are hospitalized who have major symptomatology. Another drug that he received is a drug called famotidine, common trade name Pepcid. As your audience probably knows, this has been approved for many years for the treatment of heartburn. There are some early studies that showed some survivability increase in COVID-19 patients, but again, these were not full randomized trial, and those trials are ongoing right now to show whether it really does, in fact, have worth, but he did receive that. Then there were a number of drugs that are also over-the-counter. Zinc is one of those things. It is used as an adjunctive type of therapy, and there are some observational recordings that it may be helpful in this disease. He received that. The same is true with vitamin D. Again, there are some observations, and I use that word very carefully because we don't know whether this will hold water over a long period of time, that it could be helpful. And melatonin is another drug, which is a naturally occurring antioxidant that you can buy over the counter that has some anti-inflammatory properties. And there is at least one randomized control study in progress to see whether it has use in this disease other than some of the observations that have been recorded. In addition, he also received daily aspirin therapy, and we know that aspirin has certainly has been used for its anti-clotting abilities, that clotting in this disease can be a real issue, and so the hope was by giving him daily aspirin that it might reduce the propensity to have clots and pulmonary emboli. We know that at one point it was given almost routinely in many people to prevent heart attacks, but that has since been rescinded because the overall risks seem to outweigh the benefits in non-COVID patients. So those are the drugs that the president received. He clearly seems to have done better. He was released from the hospital. The latest pictures show him engaging with the press without having supplementary oxygen, and it remains to be seen whether this will continue. In many people, some of the worst days are someplace after a week, somewhere between day 7 and day 10. So if he gets past that period of time and doesn't have any major ill effects, then the likelihood is that he will have done very well with the disease.
I want to apologize for not being in touch sooner. I know there was a big gap between our last conversations, but I missed how absolutely incredible the information you provide is.
Well, thank you very much. I'm always glad to hear that, and I really consider that to be one of our main missions right now for many of us in this field, to try and provide what we think is scientific information that's devoid of a lot of the politics that's swirling around this and a lot of other things in our lives currently.
The president did say and suggest, and I quote, "Don't be afraid. Don't let it dominate you," as he referred to coronavirus and COVID-19. Is that a cause for concern?
I would say that it comes down to how you interpret it, the words. By saying that you shouldn't let this disease paralyze you, I think that that's appropriate. If the implication is that it isn't a disease to worry about, that would be inappropriate. So, as with everything else in politics and what every politician says, it's all in the eyes of the beholder and how you take those words. We do know that this disease is still with us. There's several things that have been, a useful outcropping of the president coming down with the disease, if you can use that term. Number one, it does bring out the fact that the disease hasn't gone away. That number two, that it can be serious because he was hospitalized. He did have some change in his vital signs and his respirations. That could have been potentially serious. So from that standpoint, for people who think that this is all made up, that the disease really doesn't exist anymore, or that it's totally over and that we need to drop all precaution, that's not the case. And in fact, if you look closer at some of his words, he did say something to the effect that now that he's come down with the disease, he's got it. And I think what he tried to say is that he can appreciate the severity, he can appreciate what somebody is going through. But I certainly would not take it for granted and say that it isn't anything that one needs to worry about if that means abandoning all of the things that we know that are useful to prevent a disease.
There's reports that contact tracing is not happening. Is that dangerous regarding our executive branch, whoever may occupy the office?
We know that contact tracing is an essential part of this disease. I read in the publications that a number of those folks who were at these events, in fact, have been tested. So I would assume that as they get tested and if they're positive, that the people that they've been in contact with are also being notified. We know that contact tracing can be very, very useful in some circumstances. On the other hand, it isn't the thing that is absolutely going to stop the disease. It really depends on the kind of situation that you find yourself in. As you know, when we were in the midst of it, where it was absolutely terrible in parts of the Northeast, like New York City, because there were so many cases, that contact tracing became impossible and probably wouldn't have been very effective. In areas like ours right now that your audience is listening to, where there seems to be, even though there's a rise in the disease, it's still relatively low, we think that contact tracing can be very, very useful in those kinds of situations. And again, taking the proper precautions when you actually find that these contacts are in fact positive, and also while you're doing the testing and they're in a period that they have to be quarantined, it'll prevent the spread to others. So I absolutely believe that contact tracing is useful, but I don't want to leave you with the impression that it is the only thing that will stop this disease.
You've mentioned before the definition of novel coronavirus is that it's never been around before and that it's absolutely new for the medical establishment, infectious disease, and epidemiologists alike. What have we learned about the novel coronavirus on a local level? Your personal experience or St. Luke's University Health Network's experience with their patients?
That's an excellent question because there is a lot to be learned, and I always start off with one of the things that is most important is that you have to learn to be humble with this, and that to walk away and say that we've got this is an absolute exaggeration and speaks of hubris that doesn't really belong in this kind of situation. That although we have learned a lot, we also know that on a day-to-day basis, our knowledge is changing, the disease seems to be changing in some ways, and that we have to be humble enough to know that although we may have been getting a lot of expertise, to say that we are expert in this disease would be a misstatement of major proportion.
Thank you, Dr. Jeffrey Jerry of St. Luke's University Health Network. We appreciate your time and expert information.
I hope that was helpful. It's always a pleasure, James. And I hope that you, your family, and your colleagues are staying safe and healthy.
For WDIY News, James Johnson reporting.